That scripture has got to be one of the saddest / scariest verses in the Bible. And it's amazing because I think most of us can relate in some capacity, not fully what Peter experienced there, but denying Jesus three times after you adamantly said you would never do such a thing. In fact, you would die for him. Hearing the rooster crow, and in Luke's version, he says that Jesus turned, and this vision that we have of Jesus and Peter seeing each other eye to eye. What Peter must have felt at that moment and going forward, I don't know. It's got to be one of the worst feelings ever, right? The weight upon his chest at that moment and thereafter. And somehow we can all relate to that in a way, can't we? Unfortunately, we can all relate to that. Of knowing that we let Jesus down, of knowing that we disappointed our Father when the full force of a sin that we have committed has hit us, when we realize that punch to the gut, that's not a fun place to be, is it? Jesus told him it would happen, but he told him, when you've come back, right, when you've returned, I prayed for you that when you return, you'll be able to strengthen your brothers. And that's what we're going to look at this morning. We're talking about Jesus in John chapter 21. That's where we'll be. You can turn to your Bibles there. I won't have anything on the screen for you. You got to put in a little bit of the work yourself, guys. All right, you got to bring your Bible. There's some extra ones over here. Open to John 21. We're gonna work our way through John 21 this morning. And look at that. Because as ugly as that is of what Peter did and went through, it just makes what Jesus does even more beautiful, right? And that's kind of in a nutshell salvation and grace and mercy, amazing grace that Ryan talked about. So here we have in John 21, we know Jesus already appeared to his apostles a couple times. And now we have it starting in verse 1. It says, afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And it happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I believe at least one of those other two was probably John, since he's writing this. He says, I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go with you. And you can imagine, you know, Peter, he's gone through this, so what we just read about in Luke, of this denying Jesus three times, of Jesus knowing, Peter knowing that Jesus knows that he denied him. They have encountered each other already, but still, there's got to be this awkwardness between them. Not on Jesus' side, of course, but on Peter's for sure. This feeling like he can't fully come before Jesus. He can't be free. There's a wall there that, because of Peter's denying, there's got to be just, he's in a very strange position, and that's got to just be sitting on him, okay? And they've seen Jesus since then, since the death. They know he's resurrected, but still, you know, all of this is, they don't know fully what to make of it. Jesus had told them, you know, go to Galilee and wait for me. And that's where they're at, by the Sea of Galilee, Tiberias. And Peter says, I'm going out to fish. Whether it's to go make some money, because, you know, they got to put food on the table. Whether it's just to kill time or, you know, I'm doing this to get this off my mind. I don't know. I need to think. Whatever. I'm going to fish. And some of the other guys say, we're going with you. So they're in a boat. And they're fishing all night. Verse 3 says, that night, though, they caught nothing. They didn't catch anything. Maybe they really weren't even trying to fish, you know. They were just out there. Who knows? But they're out there all night. They're not catching anything. Verse 4, early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. So they see this figure on the shore. They're about 100 yards out, the Bible's going to tell us. They don't know that it's Jesus. But he calls out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? Sure, he's yelling out, have y'all caught anything? Of course, their answer is no. They haven't caught anything. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. When they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. And we're reminded this story has already happened before. In fact, this exact thing pretty much happened in the beginning of the ministry. When he tells them, you know, throw your net on the others, or, you know, cast, put your boats out, let's cast. He said, we fished all night, we didn't catch anything, but since you said so, we're going to do it. And they pull in a bunch of fish, right? This happened, I believe, in Luke 5. And so Jesus says, well, from now on, you're going to be fishers of men, right? Look, you're listening to me, you follow what I say, you can catch fish. Well, if you follow what I say, you're going to catch humans, right? And so this happens. Jesus calls out, well, throw your net on the other side. And so they do it, and all of a sudden, there's tons of fish. And then, boom, the light bulb goes off. They know who it is. right? They realize that it's Jesus, John says, or it says the disciple whom Jesus loved, which we're going to assume is John. We don't know for sure, but verse 7, he tells Peter, it's the Lord. It's him, right? Who else would have told us this and it would have happened, right? It's Jesus. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say it's the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him because he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. It's interesting that John mentions this, and you know, they're out in the boat. It's probably warm. He has taken his outer garment off. Maybe he didn't want to get it wet, wearing whatever his undergarment is. And he's out there, and when he's going to go to Jesus, I would think, I'm not going to put on more clothes to swim 100 yards. That's going to slow me down. And I don't know if he just wrapped it around him. He didn't. But I think part of it here and why John says this is Peter, he's going to go before the Lord because he can't help himself. But I think he also realizes he has to cover up. And maybe it's out of just respect, but maybe it's out of, there's shame there, right? There's some shame with Peter. He can't bear himself in front of Jesus. He has to bring that outer garment to cover up. We do this, sometimes in our own selves. When we know we've done something we're not proud of, or we're embarrassed in front of other people, we cover up. Maybe we wear our hair down in our face, or we wear hoods over. We see teenagers do this often. Not talking about you, Brandon. Just, I know you're cold. It's summertime in Houston. It gets cold. But we know. I'm kidding, bro. We do this sometimes, right? We try to hide in a physical way what's going on the inside. I think maybe that might have been that's my speculation. I don't know. But he grabs his outer garment and he swims to him. Verse 8, the other disciples followed in the boat and they're towing the net behind them because they can't lift it up in the boat. It's too heavy. And then they get to shore. Verse 9, when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus had taken the time to build a fire and to start cooking some breakfast for his apostles, who he knew would be hungry because they'd been out all night. How did Jesus get these fish? You know, he could have easily just multiplied them. He could have probably snapped his fingers and they jumped out of the water and landed on the grill. Could have snapped his finger. I don't know. Maybe he did that. Maybe he actually was out there fishing. Maybe he was out there, you know, on the shore watching those guys out working all night, trying to do what they were so good at, but that night were having zero success, and he was catching fish. I don't know. It's just interesting to think about. But the fact that Jesus prepared a breakfast for them is a beautiful thing. I mean, hasn't he done enough already? I mean, the man gave his life on a cross for them. What more does he need to do for them? But he knows they're going to be hungry when they come in, and he's got breakfast waiting for them. But then he also tells them, bring some of the fish you caught. I'm providing. I got this. But bring what you've done. You've caught some as well. Bring that over here. Let's have some breakfast together. Right? I think that's just, he allows them to participate in what's going on there. Awesome. Verse 11, Simon Peter climbed aboard and helped the other guys with the net. They dragged it ashore. The Bible says there was 153 large fish. What's the significance of that number? There's a lot of speculation. You can try to figure it out. No one else has, but 153 large fish. But even then, the net was not torn, the Bible tells us. And Jesus says, come have breakfast. Come have some breakfast, guys. Y'all need to eat. But none of them dares to ask, who are you? Because they know that it's Jesus. They know it's the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. And this is the third time that he saw them. So we got this. They're sitting around. You know, I don't know if they're sand or rocks or what the shore of the Sea of Galilee looks like in that area. But they're sitting there. And you know, what started out looking like just a bad night of fishing turned into a great morning of fishing. Here's Jesus who's resurrected. The questions and the thoughts and the emotions going on. Peter, who's so excited to see him that he can't contain himself. He's got to jump and swim. But at the same time, still like, you know, I denied him three times. You know, what's he think about me? It should be an amazing breakfast to be at, to be able to watch this. It's a beautiful story that we're reading here. And then they finish eating, and it's time to get down to business, right? Verse 15, when they finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Do you truly love me more than these? What is the these? Is it fishing? Is it the other disciples? You know, I think it's the other disciples. Do you love me more than these guys? Because the love that he uses there, the word that he uses for love is agape love. Do you love me more than any? Agape love is no matter what. It's not I love you as a friend. It's not a husband and wife type of love. It is like I would do anything for you. It's the type of love that God has for his children, right, for his people. That's the type of love. That's what he says when he says, do you love me? Do you love me in this way more than anything? And Peter answers him. He says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." But when he returns, when he says that, he does not use the same word, agape. He uses phileo, which is more like a brotherly love. All right, the Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. That's what he's using. I love you this way, like you're like we're fellas. You know, I got your back. You know, I'm with you like I am these guys. Right? That's the word. That's how he answers him. And then he asks him again. He says in verse 16 again. Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? Agape love. Do you love me more than anything?" And Peter says, "Yes, Lord. You know that I." Phileo, love you, brotherly love. And this is interesting. How come he can't answer the same way in which Jesus asked? You know, I think if Jesus would have asked Peter this question 2 weeks before, he would have responded with agape. I think he would have. Because he told Jesus already, I will kill for you. Right? Even if everyone else runs away, I'm with you, Jesus, no matter what. That's what Peter told Jesus, which led Jesus to tell Peter, "Peter, you're going to deny me 3 times." Something that Peter could not imagine himself doing. But when it came time, when people accused him of knowing Jesus, he denied it 3 times, right? I think Peter's afraid to answer. I think Peter does love Jesus in that way, but I think Peter's questioning himself in that. Do I truly love him? He cannot bring himself to say, "I love you no matter what." You know why? Because of what he's already done. I think that's what's going on here. Jesus is asking him this, and Peter wants to tell him this, and I think he really wants to believe it, but there's a lot of doubt there now in his mind. How can I dare say that? I thought I did. I thought I loved you like that, Jesus, but I don't know anymore now. I denied you, all right? And then so Jesus asked him one more time, verse 17. The third time he says to him, "Simon, son of John, do you phileo love me? Do you love me like a brother?" First 2 times he asked him, "Do you love me no matter what, over everything else?" And this is the third time he asked him, "Do you love me, but to a lesser degree, a different type of love?" Okay, Peter, do you then love me this way? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me in this way?" He's hurt by this. And is he hurt because Jesus is being mean? Or is he hurt because of what he's done? You know, why is Peter hurt here by Jesus asking him this way? Maybe he was hoping Jesus to tell him something. To say, "You know, no, it's okay. What you did's fine. You know, you do love me that way." I don't know, but he's hurt by that. He asked him this a third time, but he asked him in the way in which he answered. Peter told him, "Yeah, I love you. Like a brother, in a brotherly way." And so Jesus then asked him, "Do you, Peter? Do you really love me in this way?" And he's hurt. But he says, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Like a brother. Peter can't bring himself to say it. But here's the amazing thing by this. Each one of these times, he told him, "Feed my lambs. Take care of my sheep. Feed my sheep." After every answer, he told him that. "Simon, do you love me no more anything? You know that I love you like a brother." "Okay, feed my lambs. Feed my sheep. Take care of my sheep." After each time, he told him that. What an interesting thing to say to him when he asked him this. "You love me? Okay. Let me see it in action now. I told you when you denied me, I prayed for you so that you would come back so that you could strengthen your brothers. You love me like a brother? Okay, I can handle that. I can take that. I want you to love me no matter what. But if all you can muster is enough love for me as a brother, I'll take that. But let me see it in action. Let me see it in action. How are you going to treat your brothers?" In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus told his apostles, "Look, when I come back, when the Son of Man returns in all his glory, we're going to gather everyone up, all the nations, and we're going to separate people into 2 groups. We're going to have sheep on one side, and we're going to have goats on the other. And we're going to say to the sheep, 'Come be in my Father's kingdom that was prepared for you, because I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you gave me clothes to wear. I was in prison and you visited me. I was sick and you took care of me. Come be with me.'" And they're going to say, whoa, Jesus, what do you mean? I never saw you sick or without clothes or hungry. Like, I never saw these things." He said, "Whenever you did to the least of these brothers of mine, you did to me." And then he's going to tell the goats, "Depart. Depart from me to punishment. Depart from me, because I was hungry and you never fed me. I was thirsty, you never gave me anything to drink. I was naked and you never gave me clothes. I was in prison and you never visited me. I was sick and you never came and took care of me. And I said, we never saw you like that, Jesus, because surely if we'd have saw you, we would have done that. And whatever you did for the least of these brothers or mine, or whatever you didn't do, he tells them, you didn't do for me. When we do for others, we're doing for Jesus. And that's how we show that we love him. The first time he told them, or the first time Jesus encountered the apostles and he told them to cast their nets into the other side of the sea, or the other side of the boat, excuse me, and they hauled up this great amount of fish, and he said, okay, I'm going to make you fishers of men. You're going to go out and you're going to do these things. You're going to go out and proclaim the gospel, and you're going to heal, and you're going to feed, and you're going to provide for my sheep out there. You're going to be shepherds. That's what you're going to do. And now he encounters them again after the resurrection, and he says, put your nets on the other side of the boat. And they bring up this great amount of fish, and he's telling them the same thing, I think. And he's letting Peter, he's reminding him of this. Peter, you told me once before that you loved me. You told me that you would go to death with me. You had told me, you know, that you would do anything for me, but when it came down to it, you denied me. I don't need to hear your words. I want to see your actions. You say that you love me like a brother, okay, then feed my sheep. You say you love me in this way, take care of my sheep. That's what he's telling him. Peter messed up, and Peter knows this. And Jesus doesn't pile on him. He gives him another opportunity. He reinstates him because Jesus is going to use Peter mightily in the beginnings of the church, in the beginnings of this new way that's starting. Peter is going to be a great leader. But Peter had to go through this and understand that what Jesus wanted from him is not just his words, but his actions and indeed his own life. Jesus said, feed my sheep. In verse 18, he says, I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted to go. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. He let Peter know, you will follow me. You will go to death for me. Before it kind of came and hit you in the face and you just go, no, I'm not ready for that. And he wasn't. Because salvation did not rely on Peter's own faith and his own ability in his own faith, but it relied on the sacrifice of Jesus and the mercy of God. And now he's telling him, this will happen to you. You will stretch out your hands. They're going to tie them up, and they're going to lead you where you do not want to go, right? Until that day happens, you need to take care of my flock. You need to take care of my sheep. And that's how you're going to show me that you love me. Words are not enough, church. It's our actions that show what's really in our heart. Are we feeding God's sheep? Are we tending to his lambs? Is this what we're all about? Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This is the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, Lord, who's going to betray you? We believe this to be John. And Peter saw him and said, Lord, what about him? That's such a human thing to do, right? Well, what about this guy? You know, I'm going to be led away to a place I don't want to go. What about this guy? Jesus said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what's that to you? You must follow me. Oh boy, church, if we could just take those sentences right there. Why are we so concerned? Well, what about him? What about him? Well, look what he's doing. Look what she's doing. What's that matter to you? You follow me. We need to be more concerned about our walk in Jesus and following him than what we think other people are doing or not doing. Oftentimes we can look at other members in the church. We can look at leaders in the church and we can say, well, man, we should be doing this, or how come they're not doing that? And I think Jesus is telling us, okay, but what are you doing? Are you looking after the sheep? Are you committing yourself to serving others and loving others and fulfilling the needs of others? Because that's what we can control and that's what we need to be about, right? Not so much concerned what everyone else is doing. But what are we doing for Jesus? How are we showing that we love him? Peter, obviously, I mean, what his emotions got to be, I mean, even after this, you know, after this breakfast, how did he feel? You know that weird, awkward feeling that you've probably had after you've sinned. And, you know, maybe you've had this experience. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. Maybe you've done something bad. You feel horrible about it. Maybe you went and took it before others that you know and love and care about. Maybe before the church. And you brought it before a group of people. And they rallied around you. And they prayed with you. And said, you know, hey, okay, you're forgiven. You know, Jesus died for these sins. Like, you're forgiven. And, you know, it's time to move on. And there's this, like, kind of lifting up of burden, but also, like, it's still, like, it doesn't just go away like that, right? It doesn't just go away like that. How often did Peter think about the time that he denied Jesus and Jesus looked at him? I bet it came to his mind often, but I like to think that he had enough trust and enough faith in Jesus Christ that he knew that that was forgiven, because Jesus had given him a task to do, to lead, to look after, to proclaim the gospel, right? Like, this is what he had to do. And he wasn't going to allow that sin to hold him down or to weigh him back. Church, we're no different than Peter in our actions, what we've done, the sins we've committed, whether they were 30 years ago or whether they were last week. We all got this stuff that we've done and we're ashamed of. Jesus died for those sins because he needs us to be free to operate within the kingdom, to not allow Satan to use those sins to keep us as a slave, but to free us from those. For one, because he loves us and he wants us with him, and he wants us to use him. He wants us to bring our fish to the breakfast. Okay? This is what he wants. He wants us to be able to work in his kingdom. Don't let the things that you have done, or the sins you've committed, or the weaknesses that you think you may have, don't let those weigh you down. Don't let Satan use those to keep you from serving. With our words, we proclaim Jesus Christ. We say that we love him in the songs that we sing and the prayers we offer him when we communicate with each other. And those are good, and those are needed, and those are beautiful. They should express what's in our heart. But even to a greater extent, our actions should speak that we love Jesus Christ. We show that we love Jesus Christ by showing that we love the least of these, his people, his children. How we act, how we treat others is how we would treat Jesus Christ. Maybe you haven't been loving Jesus Christ in that way. Okay? Okay. So I'm going to ask you, do you love him? Do you love Jesus?
Yes.
And the answer is, show it. Feed his sheep. Take care of his sheep. Right? And then one day, when he comes back, and the angels are gathering up people from every tribe and every nation and every language and every tongue, and we're there before, and you're going to be divided into one group or another, and you're going to be asked those questions: did you feed me? Did you give me something to drink? Did you clothe me? Did you visit me? Did you provide for me? We can know. All right, we have the opportunity. If you have not been doing that already, today is the day to make a change. We are a people who have been given love that we can't even fathom. We're asked to turn around and give out that love. That doesn't make sense in this world to people who say the world doesn't deserve it. That's what we're called to do, church, and we have the most beautiful example of that in Jesus Christ. If you want to be a part of that, that's what we want to be doing here at this church. If you want to commit yourself to Jesus Christ and living in his way of being this light into the world, of being this way of bringing this unfathomable love to the world, you can make that decision today to do that. If you want to become a member of this church, this body of believers here, we extend an offer to you to, yes, come join us. We want people that want to live this way. We want to do these things in this area and in this community. This is what we want to be all about. If you have things that you need to confess or things you need prayers about, the church here, the eldership here, the leaders, we want to pray for you. We want you walking in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, along with us, arm in arm. And we extend that offer to you now as we stand and sing.